The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, your source for NPR news for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, February 20th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, the idea of little food pantries, the little free library concept, but stocked with food instead of books, continues to spread. We'll travel to Fort Smith to learn more. First, the General Assembly continues to meet at the state capitol, and late Friday afternoon, five Northwest Arkansas legislators met with constituents for about an hour during a forum sponsored by the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce. 10 topics were discussed at some length, but about 50% of the time was devoted to one subject, a bill that would allow licensed concealed carry permit holders, who happen to be campus staff or faculty, to carry guns on public colleges and universities in Arkansas. The bill passed in the House as authored by Representative Charlie Collins of Fayetteville, but was amended in the state Senate last week. The Senate version would require 16 hours of active shooting training before staff or faculty members would be allowed to carry a concealed weapon. Representative Collins says he considers the amendment hostile because it guts the intention of his legislation. He says requiring the training and limiting the opportunity to only staff and faculty is too restrictive when it comes to concealed guns on campuses.
I'm agnostic on how we achieve the dual approach. We can do it by training people. That's a very good way to do it. But what I'm not going to do is stack them. So you have to be 6'9", you have to be at least 80 years old, you have to be this and this and this, because by the time somebody goes through all of those wickets, then there's nobody left that can do all of those things.
Representative Collins says he has talked to the author of the amendment, Senator Jeremy Hutchinson, and says he thinks a compromise can be developed. As in previous such forums sponsored by the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce this year, the public comments were decidedly in opposition to Representative Collins' legislation. However, he did cite a new poll from Talk Business and Politics in Hendricks College that indicates a majority of Arkansans favor his bill. State Representative Greg Letting, also from Fayetteville, says that poll isn't as important to him.
Honestly, this is the kind of issue where if you're not connected to a campus in some way, I don't care what you think. The people who live and work under these conditions are the ones that should have the most say. So I don't know that it necessarily matters that 61% of the people of Arkansas say they support this measure. But if we are going to tout this number, we should point out that a plurality of the people polled think that it should remain a decision by each individual campus and that it had the least support here in the 3rd Congressional District.
More than guns on campus was discussed Friday. State Senator Uvalde Lindsay says he's troubled by wording in a proposed constitutional amendment that would address tort reform. He says he dislikes the final paragraph.
It says the legislature has the right to tell the Supreme Court what its rules ought to be. And I think all of us in this room were brought up that there is a separation, the separation doctrine.
But Senator Lindsay did vote to allow the legislation, Senate Joint Resolution 8, to get out of committee. He says that decision came after some constituents lobbied to let the bill move on so it could be decided on by Arkansas voters in November 2018.
I voted to help bring the bill out. Got 21 votes, needed 18. I voted yes to bring the bill out, but I will tell you that I hope the bill gets defeated in November 2018, assuming it passes the House and gets on the ballot.
And not all discussion involved controversial topics. Representative Jeff Williams of Springdale says his bill that deals with domestic abuse passed unanimously last week in the House.
If you had a husband who was abusive to a wife or was abusive to children, the wife and or children may leave the home, but then the abuser was able to access telephone records and in many cases determine where they had went. This will deny them access to those records.
And finally, there was no vocal support from any of the lawmakers for legislation requiring people to use bathrooms based on the sex listed on their birth certificates. Some of the lawmakers simply remained quiet. Representative Collins says he doesn't think there's any need for such a bill. And Representative Letting strongly denounced the legislation.
It only has one co-sponsor as well. Now, that said, we do take the threat of this legislation absolutely seriously. But there is, I don't know how you could possibly come up with a problem that would warrant this kind of legislation, and we'll do everything we can to stop it if they actually try to move it forward.
Another forum, again sponsored by the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce, is scheduled for Friday, March 3rd at 4 p.m., at the Chamber's former headquarters on Mountain Street in Fayetteville. Last May on this program, we met Jessica McClard, a Northwest Arkansas resident who created the Little Free Pantry. Based on the concept of the Little Free Library, she installed a wooden box full of food outside Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville. That box was stocked by those who could give and accessed by those in need. According to a recent report from NPR, the concept has caught on, and Little Free Pantries are popping up across the country. Earlier this month, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda traveled to the River Valley to see how the initiative is spreading closer to home, and she has this report.
A bright red box greets guests as they enter Creekmore Park from the south. This is Fort Smith's first Little Free Library, and on this cloudy afternoon, it's stocked full of water bottles, baby food, and applesauce. Men and women of varying ages approach the pantry every couple of minutes and take a few items off the shelves. An hour later, the pantry is completely bare. Barbie Johnson says this is the norm.
And it's really one of the most frequented, just because there's so many families in and out through here, and a lot of families have been able to contribute to it. A lot of families have been able to take from it as well. So it's been amazing. It actually empties out within the hour. Yes. I've seen it empty within 30 minutes. A lot of times I'll fill it, I'll go run a couple laps around the park and come back and it's empty.
Johnson is a realtor and the woman who helped establish this Little Free Pantry last September. It's now one of seven in the Fort Smith area.
I had three more made. I quickly learned that I can't manage more than one. I feel like I am woman, hear me roar, but I'm just one woman. So I found that the need was so great, it was all I could do to keep it full. So the other three that we had made, other people are hosting it. We have one at a church on North 50th. It's North Point Church on North 50th. We have one at the corner of North 18th and North J. And then we have another one in front of the real estate board office on North B.
The town's other three pantries are located at churches and a local business. The Little Free Pantry initiative has expanded beyond city limits and into nearby communities.
I know that there's like five in Van Buren. They have them in Muldrow and Roland. I've seen one in Lavaca. So they are definitely spreading out around the River Valley area. And obviously the need is so great. It's all we can all do to just help meet the need.
Johnson says she's called to give, and that's her purpose in life. While the Little Free Pantry concept is fairly new to the River Valley, she says the newness hasn't worn off as far as the giving and generosity of the community.
Every one of us have hit hard times and have needed help, and so now some of us are in a position to be able to add to it and give back. One reason I chose Creekmore Park, of course I had to talk to the director of Parks and Recreation and get his approval for this, but I raised my children here in Fort Smith, and we used to come to the park all the time. When they were little, it was free, so we could come and play, and there used to be a little kiddie pool, and we used to do that. And I remember those days for us that money was so tight that if we'd have had this little pantry, it would have been helpful for us at the time. So I know there's so many families that are utilizing it that just need it right now.
Johnson says Cindy Phelan, a woman she met through her work with the pantry, plans to take this idea one step further and create a pantry for pet food.
So the pet pantry will be at the dog park off Mazzard in Fort Smith, and I imagine probably within the next couple months that will be up as well. Although in this pantry we do have people putting pet food, because you can't forget our furry family friends. So we have, you know, baby food, baby products, and then pet food. You know, people bring cat food and dog food, or I've even seen little, you know, toys for the pets that people have added, because if we're having a hard time putting food on our table, you know, we're having a hard time feeding our pets as well. So that's going to be a great addition when that goes in.
For more information, search for the Creekmore Park Community Pantry on Facebook. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It is Monday, February 20th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, who is with Talk Business and Politics. Happy Monday, Michael.
Well, happy Monday to you as well.
Let's talk about a couple things we just didn't have time for during our Friday conversation that also happened last week. There have been some changes at the top at Tyson Foods. What does this mean for the company?
Well, that is a great question. obviously when Tom Hayes came in, he succeeded Donnie King. And he comes from Hillshire. You know, Tyson bought Hillshire several years ago, major acquisition for them. We knew there would be some changes. You knew there'd be some management shifts. But Kyle, this is a 180 from any of the changes we've seen in the past. I mean, in the past, the changes have really been that the divisions, that the structure of the company remained the same, but the names changed. This one, you had both the structure and the names changing. So instead of having a specific person over chicken and beef and one over prepared foods, and all answering to the CEO, the division is now more in terms of, it's less about the segment and more about what they're doing. For example, Sally Grimes is head of North American Retail. You have Andy Callahan, president of North American Food Services and International. Those are two new positions. Those are Hillshire folks reporting to a former Hillshire CEO of Tyson now. Noel White is the Tyson guy remaining really in the top leadership structure. He's the chief operations officer. So this is a significant shift. I think concern's not the right word. What's the right word? We're going to be watching this because we have a little bit of history when Tyson bought IBP many years ago. There were some leadership changes, and they brought some IBP folks in, and there were some structural changes, and that didn't go very well at all. If you remember, I'm sure many of your listeners remember that Don Tyson at the time, and let's not kid ourselves, the Tyson family still runs this company, but Don Tyson at the time had to bring Leland Tollett and Buddy Ray back, to especially Leland, to get the company back on its feet. And so this is even a more significant shift than we even saw through that IBP transition. But you know, the Mr. Hayes is inheriting a company that's clicking on all cylinders in terms of finances, in terms of, you know, quarterly numbers. So he's got that on his side. Now he just has to execute with this new structure and this new staff.
Well, and some of us who've been here a long time may have to kind of rethink how we consider Tyson Foods, because as Kim Souza from Talk Business and Politics mentioned a couple weeks ago on our Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report segment that we have every Thursday, beef plays a, or at least in the last quarter, played a bigger role than chicken for Tyson.
Yes, and beef, look, the beef and chicken sales, I mean, that drives the cash flow. Those are the big generators of revenue. And so the concern, to Kim's point, the concern there is those are also the areas where if you don't execute well, you can get upside down real fast. Mm-hmm. And that's what we saw several years ago. So again, it's going to be execution, execution, execution on the part of Mr. Hayes and his new structure and his new staff.
All right, let's talk about some higher ed funding. There is a new formula. It's more performance-based. Your reporter, Eric Mitchell, talked to Chancellor Dr. Paul Barron at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. Dr. Barron says UFS should be in good shape.
Yeah, and that's welcome news for those in Fort Smith. There was some concern early on, Kyle, that the new formula would be better suited to universities like at Fayetteville, the larger universities. And the reason was is because although University of Arkansas Fort Smith is certainly becoming more of a traditional university, they still have more of the workforce type training, the associate's degrees type programs than the other universities. So there was some concern that the new funding formula would either would have some penalties or would maybe disincentivize some of that type of education. But it appears that they worked through that. We've been watching this with interest to see how this would go along. I'm somewhat impressed with Governor Hutchinson and his Dr. Markham, his director of Department of Higher Education. They've been very fluid with this, very flexible, and I think they have come up with a funding formula. Now, will the formula work? I mean, there is, as Barron said, the devil's in the details, and we'll have upcoming years to see how it works. But we're hopeful that the folks in Fort Smith are hopeful. I'm sure they are in Fayetteville, around the state are hopeful that this does not penalize universities, and that it will encourage, as the formula really is set up, to make sure that people do graduate and graduate in a timely manner, so the students don't get lost in the system, and it rewards outcomes instead of just enrollment.
Big news week last week, a lot of things, legislature meeting again in Little Rock. I'm going to guess we have something to talk about on Friday.
we'll have to narrow it down again, I'm sure.
All right. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about these stories and much more, as well as catch a daily podcast about Arkansas news at talkbusiness.net. Michael, have a great week.
Hey, thank you, sir.
On the next Fresh Air, presidential secrecy and transparency. We'll talk with writer Mary Graham, author of the new book, Presidential Secrets, The Use and Abuse of Hidden Power. Graham is the co-founder of the Transparency Policy Project at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. She'll talk about historical presidential secrets and what she describes as President Trump's lack of transparency. Join us.
Fresh Air every weekday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. And later, on today's edition of Ozarks at Large, the Ozark Ballad has been a staple for centuries, and there's work being done often at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale to keep that tradition thriving.
Hey, no, raggedy, willity, wallity, nickity, nackity, no, no, no. She combs her hair but once a year. Hey, no, raggedy, rusco quality, in every church she fetched a tear. Hey, no, raggedy, willity, wallity, nickity, nackity, no, no, no. She turned the butter in his old boot. Hey, no, raggedy, rusco quality, for a dash she used her foot. Hey, no, raggedy, willity, wallity, nickity, nackity, no, no, no.
That's ahead today on Ozarks at Large. Sodas are prominently hawked on television and radio, in stores, and at concerts and sporting events. The cost of a soda in Arkansas will soon increase after a tax package passed through the legislature that gave veterans a tax cut on their benefits, but also raised taxes on other items, including digital music downloads, unemployment benefits, and, yes, sodas. And, as Ann Kenda with Arkansas Public Media reports, some observers think the time is right for the public to reconsider just how much soda we drink.
Soda consumption is at a 30-year low, according to some estimates. But it's still the second most purchased item at grocery stores. And sugar-sweetened beverages are the single biggest source of added sugars in the American diet. Dr. Brooke Shield-Laurent at the NYIT College of Osteopathic Medicine at Arkansas State University says it's easy for soda to become an unconscious addiction.
Well, the thing with sugar beverages is that it's highly accessible and it's very cheap. And when you have these two things, in addition also, the sugar beverages can be very addictive. We see this as very much part of our daily lives. So if you're not intentional and mindful about what you're buying, about what you're drinking, it's very easy to surpass the exceeded limit of what is recommended for intake of sugar in your diet.
Perhaps because of those concerns about sugar, the culture has been shifting away from soda and even diet soda. Pepsi spent its advertising dollars during this year's Super Bowl on a commercial for its new LifeWater premium bottled water instead of cola. The decline in sugary beverages is welcome news for Gary Tobes, best-selling author of The Case Against Sugar and Why We Get Fat.
Sugar consumption has been coming down in this country since 1999, and by sugar I mean both cane and beet sugar and high fructose corn syrup, what the FDA calls caloric sweeteners. And that peaked in 1999, shortly after we became aware that we had an obesity epidemic on our hands, so I don't think that's a coincidence.
By last summer, bottled water finally overtook soda as the most commonly purchased convenience drink. Dennis Farmer with the Arkansas Beverage Association says today's beverages are smaller and healthier and come in a much greater variety.
That's why several years ago we changed our name from the Arkansas Soft Drink Association to the Arkansas Beverage Association, because our member companies have expanded so much past the traditional carbonated soft drinks you think of, and I could say different brand names and you would know exactly what I'm talking about. But now it has expanded to where we have so many more coffees, teas, juice-based drinks, sport drinks, energy drinks, different varieties in bottled water.
The decline in soda doesn't go far enough for Tobes, who caused a stir in 2011 with a cover story in New York Magazine that asked, is sugar toxic? He initially wanted to call his book Stealing Christmas, The Case Against Sugar, as an admission that anyone who would dump on sugar is going to be considered a Grinch. His last chapter, How Little is Still Too Much, drives his point home.
If I'm right, we should be saying sugar causes diabetes in the same way that we say tobacco causes lung cancer. So we don't say smoking too many cigarettes causes lung cancer, or smoking too much causes lung cancer, or over-smoking causes lung cancer. We just say smoking causes lung cancer. And then if I'm right that sugar is a kind of fundamental trigger of diabetes, then we start saying sugar causes diabetes, not too much sugar causes diabetes, or overconsumption of sugar causes diabetes.
Soda will cost an extra 5% in Arkansas in 2018. Health advocates will be watching to see if that's enough to push sugary soft drinks out of second place in the great grocery race from shelf to bag. For Arkansas Public Media, I'm Ann Kenda.
Arkansas Public Media is a journalism project funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and public broadcasting entities in Arkansas. You can learn more at the Arkansas Public Media Facebook page. 91.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology certified imaging departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Sona, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, presents its Masterworks 2 concert March 4th at Walton Arts Center. It will feature Beethoven's iconic Fifth Symphony, Arvo Pärt's Fratre for strings and percussion, and guest violinist Alexi Kenny performing Sibelius' Concerto for Violin. Tickets available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Legislation requiring voters to have photographic identification to be able to vote is now being amended to allow voters without photo ID to sign a sworn statement before voting. The legislation would make false signatures equivalent to perjury. The original bill, drafted by Republican Mark Lowry of Maumelle, would have allowed a person without photo ID to cast a provisional ballot, then have to show up to the appropriate county board of election commissioners by noon the next day with photo ID. Representative Lowry says he made the amendment after conversations with the Arkansas ACLU. The new bill is scheduled to be in committee tomorrow. State Senate Pro Tem Jonathan Dismang says he believes legislation is forthcoming in the General Assembly that would separate the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday from the one recognizing the birthday of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Dismang was on Talk Business and Politics Sunday roundtable show yesterday.
It's a good bill. I think it's something that we need to do, and I think we've just had a number of controversial issues pop up pretty early on in the session, and that's maybe detracted away from that particular issue, but I believe it's something we'll get to this session.
You do think it will get done this session?
It'll get debated. The committee members and the members of the bodies, I think it will.
Senator Dismang was joined by the Speaker of the House, Jeremy Gilliam, who said only that he was unaware of such a move. Both Republican leaders demurred when host Roby Brock suggested that the Speaker and the Senate Pro Tem could marshal stronger support if they themselves authored such a bill. State officials say 19 people have died in Arkansas this season from the flu, and all of them were adults. That's compared to the 11 people who died in the state during the 2015-16 flu season. The state health department says it is not too late for people to become vaccinated. Federal health officials say this year's flu vaccine appears to be fairly effective against the most common strains this season. Among infectious diseases, flu is considered one of the U.S.'s leading killers. CDC estimates suggest that in an average year, about 35,000 Americans die from flu-related causes. A new ranking of school districts in Arkansas places a pair of Northwest Arkansas districts at the very top. Niche.com's 2017 edition of their annual list names Fayetteville as the best overall district in the state and Bentonville second. The list also places Greenwood fourth and Rogers eighth. Gravett, Prairie Grove, Springdale, and Siloam Springs also made the list top 20 districts in the state. The site uses several factors to make the list, including academics in a school district, culture and diversity of a district, health and safety, and surveys from parents and students. New results from the Talk Business and Politics Hendricks College poll suggest that the new president is more popular in Arkansas than the governor. The poll of 440 frequent voters concluded 53% approve of Governor Asa Hutchinson, while 30% disapprove and 17% are undecided. New President Donald Trump enjoys exactly the same support now in Arkansas as he did on Election Day, 60%. More Arkansans, though, disapprove of the president, 35%, than of the governor. Gas prices in Arkansas are holding steady. According to a survey of more than 1,800 gas stations in the state by GasBuddy.com, the average price of a gallon of gas in Arkansas is $2.09. It's about the same price as earlier in the month. The national average is higher, about $2.27 a gallon. Arkansas's senior U.S. Senator John Bozeman will head three subcommittees in the 115th Congress. The assignments include heading the Committee on Environment and Public Works Subcommittee on Fisheries, Water, and Wildlife. And a house in Fayetteville is the latest addition to the National Register of Historic Places. The Dr. James Patrick House, a mid-century home designed by Ernie Jacks, is now on the country's official list of historically significant properties.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. A 15-year-old kid from Arkansas discovered an unusual pastime. He became a truffle salesman.
I don't know if it was the novelty of this young buck-tooth kid walking in with truffles or the quality of the truffles themselves that completed the sale, but I had fun with it and I turned a profit.
And now the truffle boy has written a book. That's next time on Here and Now.
Today from 1 to 3 on 91.3.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. This morning we're in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio at 91.3 FM speaking with Ann Crable. Ann is Director of Education and Research and Learning at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Thanks for coming up this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What's been going on at Crystal Bridges? We haven't spoke to a representative in some time.
Well, you know, I think everybody knows Crystal Bridges for its fantastic collection, for its special exhibitions, but we also have a huge education arm, and we do programs for the communities. We have also an incredible program for school students. So we've got the Willard and Pat Walker School Visit Program. Serves close to 50,000 students annually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit specifically about that service itself. What is it? What can come with that?
It's a great question. So, you know, most museums struggle to bring students in because they don't have funding for transportation or schools don't have the funding. And so oftentimes they're getting grants here and there. But Crystal Bridges really wanted to make sure that this was not a barrier for schools. So one of the first endowments that it established was the Willard and Pat Walker School Visit Endowment. It's a $10 million endowment. It's like unprecedented.
Wow.
So with this endowment, we're able to give 100% reimbursement for school buses. We are able to give 100% reimbursement for substitute teachers. So if schools need chaperones or, you know, if the art teacher wants to come and needs a sub so that the other art classes can be covered.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then we also provide every participant with a lunch. So it's a completely, you know, barrier-free but also really easy process for a teacher to be able to bring their students on a tour. We have a really robust public program, and that's everything from programs for babies. So we've just started a baby tour program to programs for families, programs that are exclusively for young adults.
I am the director of education and research and learning.
Just a huge variety of programs for any interest, from really kind of casual drop-in studio making programs to lectures. We bring in some of the most phenomenal, renowned speakers. This year alone, we're going to have Marina Abramovich come, incredible performance artist.
Okay.
We're going to have Carrie Mae Weems, who is an incredible contemporary artist. Okay. We're going to have the producers from the Chef's Table.
And to emphasize just one specific thing, that school visit program that is backed by millions of dollars. And so this is something that if you don't know, you work for a school out there, you can have, sounds like what is a really great opportunity for students for free.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if you're a parent and you want to make sure that your student goes to Crystal Bridges, talk to that teacher.
Nice. Ann Crable is Director of Education and Research and Learning at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Ann, nice meeting you, and thanks for coming up.
Thanks for having me.
For more on programs, crystalbridges.org. If you'd like to speak to Ann directly, you can email her. That's education@crystalbridges.org. It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF, where local matters.
This is Ozarks at Large. Some Tuesday mornings at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in downtown Springdale, children enthusiastically study and sing traditional Ozark ballads. Jacqueline Froelich was there one recent Tuesday, and she has this report.
Lyle Sparkman is a seventh-generation Ozarker and an expert on Ozark traditional music and ballads.
Well, my fourth great-grandparents are buried south of Elkins here in Washington County. They had arrived prior to the Civil War and fit in with the Cumberland Presbyterian community over at Cane Hill and are there on the 1850 census.
Sparkman says his fourth great-grandparents are buried south of Elkins, Presbyterians. Arriving prior to the Civil War, the city of Johnson, he says, is named after his third great-uncle. He's resided in the White River Basin, which embraces both Arkansas and Missouri, most of his life, dedicating 37 years to education, both elementary and college. He's played fiddle, mandolin, and auto harp, occasionally performing traditional North Arkansas Ozarks musical venues. Sparkman says he was raised in a family devoted to traditional Ozarks music and ballads, which spurred him to pursue a life dedicated to traditional Ozark music scholarship.
And started making contacts and paying more attention to my kith and kin and what they sang, and then went from there to other people as well.
Lyle Sparkman says that Ozark folk music shares a common ancestry with other southern regional musical traditions.
Ozark music is different from Appalachian, even though they're very closely related. The old ballads that are in Appalachia exist in the Ozarks, the very old ballads that came from the British Isles.
But the Ozark lifeway, he says, is embedded in the song, personified by the singer.
And when a young student is singing, they become 300 years old, conveying the very feeling tone of that time period into the moment.
Lyle Sparkman, a retired educator and school administrator, now spends his time teaching primarily youngsters the old song ways.
Youngsters have better memories. They listen better than adults.
One of his students is 11-year-old Kyla Cross. Kyla not only has 60 songs in her repertoire, she's remarkably composed and articulate. This morning, she's wearing a handmade flowered cotton frock, similar to what her ancestors might have worn. Cross, turns out, is also a skilled reenactor.
Acting as Lillian Tebbets, sometimes visiting schools also.
Lillian Tebbets is a well-known historic Fayetteville figure. Kyla Cross also performs Lillian Tebbets at Washington County Historical Society events. There she performs Robin Hood, an old English ballad, she says, sung by Ozark settlers.
Robin Hood and Little John, they both are gone to Pharaoh. And we will to the greenwood go to see what they do there. And for to chase the buck and doe, to chase the buck and doe. And for to chase the buck and doe, with a halen to sing merry-o.
Kyla Cross this morning is joined by her young colleagues, Fiona Davis, Jack Davis, Elizabeth Davis, and mother, Stacy Davis, who studied anthropology and folklore in college. So she brings her homeschooled children to Shiloh to learn Ozarker ballads like Willity Wallity, an English play party song that one skips to.
She combed her hair but once a year. Hey now, raggedy, rusco quality, in every church she fetched a tear. Hey now, raggedy, willity, wallity, nickety, nackety, now, now, now. She turned the butter in his old boot. Hey now, raggedy, rusco quality, for a dash she used her foot. Hey now, raggedy, willity, wallity, nickety, nackety, now, now, now.
She went outside to milk the cow. Hey, now, raggedy, rusko, quality, took a wrong turn and milked the sow. Hey, now, raggedy, willity, wallity, nickety, nackety, now, now, now. She turned the butter in his old boot. Hey, now, raggedy, rusko, quality, for a dash she used her foot. Hey, now, raggedy, willity, wallity, nickety, nackety, now, now, now.
These children collectively know over 70 ballads taught to them by teacher Lyle Sparkman, including a song about wild boars, which, ironically, this past decade are invading the Arkansas Ozarks.
There's a wild hog in these woods, kimmelikey, quiddlikewa. There's a wild hog in these woods, kimmelikeyquaw. There's a wild hog in these woods. He will kill you and suck your blood. Kimmelikey, quiddlikeyquaw. Kimmelikey,
quiddlikeyquaw. Quiddlikey? What does that mean? This is Kyla Cross.
Those were nonsense words in the song. Nonsense words are very popular. They were also in Willity Wallity. They're so much fun.
On occasion, Sparkman's gifted students perform in recital at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. 12-year-old Richard Whitaker has a cold this morning, so didn't sing much, but he did want to say this.
I feel like I have a burden because if I don't learn and I don't teach anybody else, then the history could be lost.
The Shiloh Museum of Ozark History, which encourages the learning of Ozark culture, shares that burden. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
It is Monday, February 20th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. I'm pleased to be joined once again by Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
He's not that pleased.
Oh, what Becca's referring to is that recently she had a bout with a stomach bug.
He's not that pleased. He won't let me touch anything.
No, I won't. I think most people agree.
I let you in the studio. That's true, you did.
All right.
Okay, so here's another one of those stories that I think is so stinking cool. How do we have these amazing stories around here?
Because we have so many creative people.
Well, we had so many creative people in this case. Do you know who Alfonso Trent is? I know you do.
Yes.
Okay. He doesn't remember right now, but he does. I know that face.
Yes.
Okay, you know who Henry Rennie is?
Yes.
One of my favorite people. He was the first dean of the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at UAFS. He's now gone on to Jacksonville, Florida University, where it's sunny all the time and he sounds really stinking happy. Mm-hmm. But he's also a jazz musician. Mm-hmm. And this old African-American man came to tell him a story about Alfonso Trent. Alfonso Trent was a jazz musician.
Yes.
From Fort Smith. His family were upper crust African Americans in Fort Smith. His dad was principal of Howard School, which was the only school for black students in the region. His mom was president of the Twin City Hospital Guild, the only black hospital. They owned a bunch of property. He grew up in a musical training. And then he went off and started a jazz band. And he was touring and playing what they called a territory, where he played around the Midwest.
Sure.
He was really popular.
Yeah, you territory musicians would have a circuit. Maybe you go to Kansas City and from Kansas City to OKC. And
exactly.
Then, yeah.
And he was, for his big break was an 18-month gig at the Adolphus Hotel in Dallas, which was, of course, an all-white hotel. He was the dance band playing for the very high-end audience. They were the first African-American band to be broadcast on the radio. And then they were in Chicago, and there was a fire at the club, and it destroyed all their instruments and all of their music, all their sheet music. Mm. And it was the end of the Alfonso Trent Orchestra.
That's horrible.
He came back to Fort Smith and he ran his dad's businesses, including Trent's Fountainette, which was a soda shop across from Lincoln High, which was a black high school.
Right, right.
He died in 1959 at age 57.
Young man.
having discovered him, Henry Rennie, with help from a filmmaker named John McIntosh. Well, first Henry Rennie wrote a play.
Mm-hmm.
And then he and John McIntosh got together and made this short film called Alfonso's Gold. Hopefully, maybe it'll grow up to be something. But at this point, it's about a 30-minute film that is showing at 1 o'clock on Saturday at Fort Smith Museum of History as part of Black History Month. This is not a story most of us know anything about.
No.
How cool is that? And for the cost of museum admission, which is $7 for adults and $2 for children, you can go see this story.
And peruse what's in the Fort Smith Museum of History.
Exactly. And they do have some of his things in their collection. Right. So,
and a soda fountain.
And a soda fountain.
Not his, but a soda fountain.
I love a soda fountain.
Yeah.
So that's your thing you didn't know that you should go do Saturday.
Sounds like a plan to me. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series presents Third Coast Percussion, February 24th at 8 p.m. This percussion ensemble makes use of 300 metal instruments, including tiny cymbal-like crowtails, large gongs, Burmese temple bells, and metal coils to create groundbreaking sounds. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets and information. One of the all-time great Arkansas Razorbacks is a finalist to be inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Sidney Moncrief is one of the 14 finalists, and he was one of the players most responsible for putting Arkansas basketball on the map. He was one of the famed triplets that sent the Razorbacks to the Final Four in 1978, and he's immortalized on a cover of Sports Illustrated when he's about to slam home a dunk against Texas. The inductees will be announced April 3rd, and that class will be enshrined into the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts in September. The Arkansas Razorback baseball team off to a good start, sweeping three games against Miami of Ohio this weekend at Baum Stadium. Up next, a three-game series against Bryant University beginning Friday afternoon, also in Fayetteville. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith baseball team now 5-5 after dropping three games this weekend at a tournament in Houston. The Lions travel to Southwest Baptist for a game tomorrow afternoon. The Arkansas Razorback women's basketball team will try to snap an eight-game losing streak later this week when they play at Vanderbilt. Arkansas lost yesterday at Tennessee 59-46 after leading at the half. The final home game of the season will be Sunday against Auburn beginning at 2. And the number 29 Arkansas men's golf team won the Gator Invitational in Florida over the weekend. It was the second first-place finish of the season for Arkansas.
What you hear on KUAF is powered by contributing listener support. Thousands of listeners to this public radio station give annual or monthly gifts to help pay for the programming you enjoy every day. If you have not given a gift this year or have never given a gift to KUAF, you can do so right now at supportkuaf.com.
The Arkansas State Highway Commission is awarding a $3 million contract to a company to improve safety on highway off-ramps. Chris Hickey from our partner station KUAR reports on the details.
The commission signed off on the bid by Ewing Signal Construction for a project intending to reduce wrong-way crashes on highways and interstates in Arkansas. The NHTSA, Missouri-based company will work on more than 350 off-ramps around the state, replacing and adding do not enter, wrong way, and one way signs. Contractor also plans to lower some signs so nighttime drivers can see them better. According to a 2015 Highway Department study, there were 38 wrong way crashes on state highways between 2011 and 2013. 8 of the crashes led to fatalities. Highway officials expect construction on this project to commence in about 2 to 4 weeks and say it's likely to take a year to finish. In Little Rock, I'm Chris Hickey.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. The Jelly Roll Kings were a blues trio featuring Arkansas-ers Frank Frost and Sam Carr and Mississippi native Big Jack Johnson. Formed in 1962, the band became better known over the years as its members achieved fame individually, sort of a supergroup in reverse. Guitarist and vocalist Jack Johnson was born in 1940 in Lambert, Mississippi. Frank Frost was born April 15, 1936 in Auvergne in Jackson County and was vocalist and harmonica player in the group, but it was his keyboard player in the Jelly Roll Kings that helped give the trio a unique sound. Almost exactly a decade older than Frank Frost, Sam Carr was born April 17, 1926, in Marvel in Phillips County. Carr and Frank Frost got together in St. Louis, Missouri in 1956, while Johnson met them in 1962. Sam Carr's father was slide guitar great and Phillips County native Robert Nighthawk McCullum, and Nighthawk often played with Carr's band, as did blues harmonica legend Sonny Boy Williamson II, a.k.a. Rice Miller. Carr was band leader, manager, and booking agent, and cited by many as the reason behind the group's longevity. The Jelly Roll Kings played together in one form or another for nearly four decades. Italy, Switzerland, Holland, Belgium, Australia, and the major U.S. blues festivals. But it was nearly 20 years before they'd record an album under that name. Blues fan Michael Frank first heard the three performing in Clarksdale, Mississippi in 1975 and wanted to record them so badly he launched his own record label. Rockin' the Juke Joint Down was the Jelly Roll Kings' album debut and the debut of Earwig Records of Chicago, Illinois. Another nearly 20 years passed before the Jelly Roll Kings recorded again, with 1997's Off Yonder Wall, produced by Robert Palmer for Fat Possum Records. Meanwhile, the stature of its individual members in the blues world grew. Living Blues magazine named Sam Carr the best blues drummer for 12 straight years. Frank Frost and Sam Carr were featured in the 1986 Ralph Macchio film Crossroads, and Frost appeared in a campaign commercial for Arkansas-er Bill Clinton. Beginning in the mid-1980s, Frost and Carr became fixtures at Helena's annual King Biscuit Blues Festival. Johnson, meanwhile, recorded three solo albums and appeared in Little Rock native Robert Palmer's 1992 documentary, Deep Blues. The long reign of the Jelly Roll Kings ended with the death of keyboardist, vocalist, and harmonica player Frank Frost in 1999. Almost exactly a decade after his longtime partner Frank Frost's death, drummer Sam Carr died in 2009, and vocalist and guitarist Big Jack Johnson died in 2011. After nearly 40 years but only two studio albums, the strong individuals behind this improbably long-lived blues supergroup ensure the Jelly Roll Kings will roll on. Here in its entirety are the Jelly Roll Kings, Big Jack Johnson, and Arkansas-ers Frank Frost and Sam Carr with their twist on You Are My Sunshine from 1979's Rockin' the Juke Joint Down. We'll be right back.
Sunshine Twist from Rockin' the Juke Joint Down, the 1979 debut album from the Jelly Roll Kings, Big Jack Johnson, and Arkansas's Frank Frost and Sam Carr. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
Arkansas Songs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Executive producer is Keith Merks. Arkansas Songs is underwritten by the Old State House Museum in Little Rock, a museum of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. Arkansas Songs, since 1998.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, as meetings between citizens and congressional representatives grow heated in some areas, a local group is urging for calm as a town hall with Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton approaches.
So the one thing that we're doing to prepare, I guess, for our members is just to remind them that we are peaceful. We're not going to be screaming. This is not a shouting match. Our whole point is for our voices to be heard.
Keeping the discourse civil, or at least trying to, on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large.
Senator Sheldon Whitehouse thinks there's too much corporate money in politics. He says most of the time, corporations influence Congress in subtle ways.
Except on some of the really big issues where the fossil fuel industry or the Wall Street folks say, cross us on this and we are coming after you.
I'm Kelly McEvers, Citizens United, lobbying and corporate money this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon from 3 to 6 on 91.3. A service of the Walter J. Lemke Department of Journalism in the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Winslow. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget you can listen to the show again or share individual stories by going to ozarksatlarge.com. And you can listen to us as a podcast as well, subscribing through, among other places, at Stitcher and iTunes. Classical music with Katie Hendrickson on Of Note begins at 8 o'clock, followed by Peter Van de Graaff and overnight classical music at 10. Classical music on 91.3 every Sunday through Thursday night, beginning at 8 p.m. round the clock on KUAF2 on your HD radio, at KUAF.com or through the KUAF app. Thanks so much for spending time with us. Have a good rest of your Monday.